This is Guildcast, episode 33, for June 17th, 2006. Everyone, welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean. And in this episode, I'm going to be doing another profession episode, but this time all about the warrior. Even though the warrior is probably one of the most straightforward classes to play, and probably the easiest to start out with on beginning characters, but there are some aspects of the warrior that can also be used for the more advanced players. First, though, before I get into the warrior more, there are a few players who asked to be mentioned this time around. They include Raku Charslayer, Back With It Luxon, Runaway Alchemist, and Mdude Sin. As for the updates this week, there's actually been quite a few, but ArenaNet has announced a pretty significant downtime for maintenance that's scheduled for June 20th at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time to June 21st at 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is an 8-hour downtime. That also translates to 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, both on June 21st. But basically, without reading over their entire announcement, they're going to be moving their servers to a facility that they own in Los Angeles so that they'll have more control over maintenance, crashes, you know, things like that. It seems that with this move and this 8-hour downtime, things should be running more smoothly, and hopefully the lag in the Air 7s that are abundant these days will be reduced, or hopefully even eliminated. And on June 15th, they had an update, and what they did was they added the winning items from a recent community contest to the game, they added faction bonuses for individual kills in alliance battles and competitive missions. Each kill awards the team's members with one Luxon or Kurzic faction point, and 3 Balthazar faction points. This is actually something that Lady Sinea will talk about more on her segment. They improved faction bonuses awarded at the end of an alliance battle. Both the winning and losing team's members earn 2 Luxon or Kurzic faction points for each point scored during battle. The winning team's members receive an additional 250 Luxon or Kurzic faction points. The same format now applies to the Jade Quarry and Fort Aspenwood competitive missions also. They added a confirmation dialogue when attempting to sell an equipped or hotkeyed inventory item. Now this is pretty helpful so that you won't accidentally sell the item that you use in a weapon set, or at least you'll get a warning first. I've never done this myself, but I know of plenty of people who have, actually. They corrected the levels of several NPCs in the Divine Path. They updated the location of the Die Trader in Canine Center. And they also have a new issue of The Scribe out now, if you've been keeping up with that. I've read both issues now, and it seems like it's going along pretty well. They had also some upgrades to some items. Over the past several months, they've improved a number of weapons and armors. These updates applied only to the newly generated items, not to items already in the player's inventory. You can check out the complete list of items that were updated on the GuildWars.com main site. I won't really read through them right now because there's a lot of them. But this is good for things like the plate mail that were improved. But in my opinion, it's bad for people who have some of the green items that were improved, since now it makes the ones that they currently own pretty worthless. And with this being said, be aware of the changes to these items if you're looking to buy something soon, as you might be buying one of the old ones before the update. I'm sure there should be a list of these updated items and what the changes were very soon on guildwiki.org. And then on June 16th, ArenaNet announced that a PDF version of the Guild Wars Factions game manual is online now and available for you to download. This allows those who purchase the game through their PlayNC store to have their own copy of the manual, and it gives others the opportunity to save the manual on their computer or to print an extra copy. They also say that next week they'll be offering the Prophecies Manual in the same format. Now, something pretty significant also happened this week. Apparently it was possible for you to pick up gold and item drops when two enemy groups fought each other. It was also possible for the henchies in your party to drop the gold that they had collected while adventuring with you when they died. So there was a ton of speculation about this. Everything from, you know, it was included in the June 15th update as a feature to, oh my god, ArenaNet is going to do another rollback, it's the end of the world. But it turns out that it was a bug after all. On June 16th, they had another update where they announced that they fixed a bug that caused henchmen to drop gold when they died. They also fixed a bug that caused monsters to drop loot, even if your party had no part in killing them. They fixed a bug in PvP that caused dead players to receive morale boosts for the deaths of opposing team members. They added Priests of Balthazar to all Alliance battle posts. They added 4 new maps to the Random Arena and the Team Arena. They fixed a bug that caused the caravan to stop moving in Gala Hatchery. This was actually another well-known exploit that if you went to the hatchery, you could see people all over saying, looking for group for the back way. So they actually fixed that exploit. They also fixed bugs and made improvements to the Shadow Blade quest. They fixed the descriptions of several ranger skills, which were displaying incorrect values after the last update. Now, I haven't really been able to play as much this week, which is no fun at all because I have to, like, do stuff around the house or something. But I'm having a lot of troubles with Air 7s ever since the update last Friday, and it's driving me nuts. It won't even let me stay on for more than, like, 5 minutes at a time. Hopefully, I figure out that soon, because I've missed out on some excitement this week. A couple of members of the new Guildcast Guild won Hall of Heroes last weekend, and they posted screenshots of it in the forums. I was excited about this since I'm trying to get more into PvP lately. I know before I was like, PvP, whatever, you know, but I'm actually learning a lot more about it, and since most of my PvE characters have nothing else to do but farm, I'm trying out PvP, and it turns out I'm really enjoying it. Of course, you know, I still won't even go near the random arenas unless I'm trying out a new build. I'm trying to stick to PvPing with friends and guildies in the team arenas, mostly. I still have yet to win in HOH, though, so that's a personal goal of mine now. And while on the topic of PvP, I guess this would be as good a time as any to announce the new long-awaited PvP segment of Guildcast, which will start very soon. It'll be hosted by Slaughter on the forums, who he's actually been a fan of Guildcast since the early days, and he's helped me out in a lot of aspects of the game where I've needed him. He's currently in a pretty high-ranking guild, and I'm not sure exactly what their position is on the ladder as of today, but I'm sure he can talk about that more once he starts his segment. So I hope everyone gives him a warm welcome to the Guildcast family, and be sure to look for the new PvP board on the forums where he'll be moderating. The warrior is the only melee class of the original 6 professions and has many skills designed to enhance the use of swords, axes, shields, and hammers. Warriors are able to don the most resilient armor in the game, allowing them to trade hits with the biggest, meanest foes in the game. They also have the primary attribute strength, which grants extra armor penetration when using melee skills. Many warrior skills revolve around combining straight-up physical damage with crippling status conditions. They also have access to stances, which modify their abilities, and shouts to boost the party's performance and impair groups of enemies. Anyone looking to use a sword, axe, shield, or hammer should take warrior as either their primary or secondary profession. Keep in mind that all characters are restricted to the armor and primary attribute of their primary profession, but even without the warrior's armor and strength, some secondary warrior builds can be quite effective. Taking warrior as a secondary can be useful even for characters who will never use a melee weapon due to the warrior's protective shouts and stances. The primary warrior's base armor provides high protection and plus 20 armor versus physical attacks. A starting primary warrior can expect to have 20 maximum energy and 2 energy recovery. Strength is the warrior's primary attribute, meaning only primary warriors can use this attribute. It gives 1% armor penetration per attribute level when using attack skills. It also has the secondary benefit of enhancing strength-based skills, which mostly relate to doing damage or surviving. Strength is a requirement for some shields, although there are also shields that require tactics. Even if a warrior does not utilize any strength skills, it's recommended that any spare points be placed into strength, if only for the purpose of dealing a little more damage when using attack skills. Now here's a list of some interesting strength skills. Power Attack, Griffin Sweep, and Leviathan Sweep are direct damage attack skills that may be used with any weapon. Protector Strike and Bull Strike are skills that may be used with any weapon to deal extra damage to moving foes, which is especially helpful in PvP. Endure Pain and Defy Pain grant extra health to survive when health is low, near the end of the battle. Sprint and Rush allow you to move faster into or out of battle. Signet of Strength, Warrior's Cunning, and Berserker Stance can make your attacks more effective or faster. Warrior's Endurance is an excellent way to gain energy in combat. Swordsmanship is the warrior's attribute that affects the damage done when attacking with a sword. It also directly affects the power of swordsmanship skills. Swords have the lowest maximum damage of all warrior weapons, but they make up for it by having the smallest damage range. A maximum damage sword does 15 to 22 damage compared to an axe's 6 to 28, or a hammer's 19 to 35. This gives swords a higher average damage per hit than axes. Swords and axes attack at the same speed, which is faster than hammers. Swordsmanship skills are quite varied, offering both extra damage and the ability to cause a variety of conditions on the enemy, most importantly, bleeding. However, most of these condition skills require the enemy to have flesh, making enemies such as the elementals or skeletons more of a challenge for sword users. Axe Mastery reflects a warrior's skill with using an axe. Leveling up this skill also affects the critical hit rate and the effectiveness of axe skills. Compared to swords, axes have a higher maximum damage, lower minimum damage, and the same attack rate. Specifically, a maximum damage axe will do 6 to 28 damage, compared to 15 to 28 for a sword. While this means swords have a higher average damage per hit, it means axes are better for critical hits, which always use the maximum damage of a weapon. The majority of axe skills are adrenaline-based, so it's advisable for an axe-focused warrior to use adrenaline-increasing skills or equipment. A lot of axe skills cause deep wounds or have an extra effect on deeply wounded foes. This means axe users will generally be less effective when facing fleshless monsters that cannot suffer deep wounds. The Hammer Mastery attribute reflects the warrior's skill with a hammer. Hammers deal the greatest damage per hit, but are slower than axes or swords. But that said, hammers provide the most damage per second and are very effective in creating knockdown chains, which can keep the enemy on the ground, unable to do anything. These chains usually include either of the elite skills Backbreaker or Devastating Hammer, and are mostly used in PvP. Tactics is the warrior attribute that mostly revolves around stances and shouts. Some stances provide party-wide benefits, making the tactics-proficient warrior a more useful party member than otherwise. Tactics is also a requirement for several shields, however, there are also shields that require strength, as I mentioned before. For a list of interesting tactics skills, we have Protector's Defense, Shields Up, and Watch Yourself, which grant additional armor or additional chance to block attacks to other party members. Then there's Gladiator's Defense, Riposte and Deadly Riposte, which block incoming attacks and cause damage to the attacking foe. Defensive Stance, Wary Stance, Benetti's Defense, Deflect Arrows, Shield Stance, and Discipline Stance grant blocking, evading, or armor bonuses against incoming attacks. Charge and Retreat grant speed bonuses to allies or party members. I could probably go on and on about stories involving my warrior all day since it was the first class that I brought all the way through the game, and it's the class that I learned the most with through my mistakes. But in my experiences, I'd say the warrior is the most forgiving of classes to play. You can make small mistakes while playing a warrior, and not too many people will really notice. Heck, I hate to admit it, but while playing my warrior, there have been times when I've started attacking a foe, ran into the other room, grabbed something to drink, came back, and didn't miss a beat. That's just something you can't do while playing a monk. But that being said, when someone knows how to play a warrior well, it can make all the difference in the world to your party. This brings us to the topic of how to be an effective warrior. As a warrior, your place is in battle. Knee-deep in foes and first in the fight. Warriors have the highest natural armor rating of any class, as well as defensive and enduring skills such as Endure Pain, I Will Survive, and Defensive Stance. Warriors can make use of adrenaline skills that take no energy. These skills have to be charged by gaining adrenaline, which can be very useful for the low-energy warrior. Warriors can also use shouts, which have no activation time and often aid the entire party. As a warrior, you should be the first in the battle and the last out. Your primary responsibility is to mitigate damage to the rest of the group by soaking it yourself. You attempt to block or hinder your foes, attacking the casters. Engage other warriors attempting to attack your party. Once the greater threats to your casters have been dealt with, then you move on to the opposing casters. Always carry a resurrect skill of some kind, as your higher armor rating and survival skills mean you will be most likely to survive a near-wipe situation. Monk and ritualist secondaries should carry reusable resurrection spells like Rebirth or Flesh of My Flesh. It's also advisable for warriors to carry self-healing skills. Self-healing skills can keep the warrior effective longer and allow primary monks to concentrate healing on more vulnerable allies. It's important to choose a single weapon to use with your warrior. Attribute points are in short supply, and focusing on a single weapon is the only way to use them effectively. Here's some advantages of swords. Swords attack once every 1.33 seconds and deal a maximum of 15 to 22 damage per hit, not considering critical hits and strength or skill-based armor penetration. This gives them a reasonably predictable damage value per second. Sever artery causes bleeding for additional damage over time, and gash can inflict a deep wound, hampering the target's healing efforts. Both icy and fiery dragon swords are available. The unique skills for these items make them very popular. Now, as far as disadvantages of swords, swords are comparatively popular, making it harder to find the appropriate upgrades through trade. All but one Tyrion and about half of the Canton Green swords are vampiric, making it harder to find a suitable general-purpose sword that's commonly available. Now on to the advantages of axes. Axes attack at the same rate as swords, but deal a maximum of 6 to 28 damage per hit. At 11 axe mastery, an axe will do more damage due to the critical hit rate than an equivalent sword at 11 swordsmanship. Several general-purpose green axes are available in both Tyria and Cantha. Cyclone Axe is the strongest area of effect attack for any warrior weapon. Penetrating Chop and Penetrating Blow have an additional 20% armor penetration. Eviscerate is very powerful, causing 200 plus damage most of the time. Follow up with Executioner Strike and you have a lot of damage in a short time. And there's only one real disadvantage of an axe, and that's several tactic skills depend on having a sword equipped. Now on to the advantages of hammers. Hammers have the potential to deal more damage than any other weapon, a maximum of 19 to 35. Several hammer mastery skills cause knockdown. Several general-purpose green hammers are available in both Tyria and Cantha. Now for the disadvantages of hammers, they attack slower than any other weapon, once every 1.75 seconds. This can be mitigated with Berserker Stance or Tiger Stance. Hammers are two-handed and prevent the use of a shield. Several tactics skills depend on having either a shield or a sword equipped. Some suggested skills for a warrior are Warrior's Endurance, Berserker Stance, and While in the Stance Equipment. At 12 strength, Warrior's Endurance lasts 20 seconds. Berserker Stance lasts 10, and both recycle in 30 seconds, allowing you to remain stanced and gain constant benefit from stance equipment. Additionally, the energy gain from Warrior's Endurance allows the use of energy-expensive attack skills and or maintained enchantments. Doliac Signet and Watch Yourself. Both of these skills have no energy cost and provide unconditional armor bonuses. Watch Yourself can be maintained continuously even with zero tactics, providing sufficient adrenaline and 20 armor. At 16 strength, The duration, recharge, and casting time of Doliac Signet allows a continual plus 42 to AL. Combined at those levels, these skills reduce incoming damage by roughly 62%. Skullcrack and Berserker Stance. At 12 strength, both Dazed and Berserker Stance last 10 seconds, allowing you to interrupt your target caster once a second for 10 seconds. Ranger secondaries may wish to use Bestial Fury or Tiger's Fury, as they can be renewed. Assassin secondaries may wish to use Silencing Daggers for the slightly higher attack rate and lengthened Dazed duration. Now, I've read a lot of warrior hate posts on various forums about why we even need warriors. Several people claim that both chapters of Guild Wars can be won without ever having a warrior in your party. Well, I think that even though this may be true, as well as true for other professions, if you play your cards right, a warrior has certain advantages that other classes don't. The main advantage is their ability to absorb damage and direct the attention of mobs away from the rest of the group and focus it on themselves. This is referred to as tanking. If done correctly, a good tanking warrior can hold back a group of enemies, while the casters of the group do the real damage. This way also, the monk of the party only has to worry about healing one person, if all goes well. Warriors get a bad reputation in Guild Wars, mainly because of the people who play them poorly, and the fact that they're a dime a dozen. Some examples of playing your warrior poorly include running ahead of the party to take on groups of monsters without waiting for the rest of the party to recharge their energy or health. Just because you have 20 energy and you hardly use any of it doesn't mean that the rest of the party is in the same boat. Also, in relation to this running forward, don't run so far forward that your party's monk can't heal you. They have a certain range in which they can heal, and if you run out of that range and die, then proceed to blame them for not healing you, expect to be on the bottom of their healing priority list the next time around. If you aggro a group of enemies, meaning you get close enough to them to attract their attention, and then run back towards your party, this is a very bad move if you're a warrior. Tank warriors, once they do aggro correctly, need to stay up with the foes to keep them away from the fragile casters. If you run forward, gain aggro, and then run back to your party, and the monsters follow you back and kill the Ellies, or the Necros, or the Monks, then it's no one's fault but your own.
This is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. If you've seen the new updates, you know that there are a couple of really cool things that have been done. They've increased the faction bonuses for alliance battles and for the competitive missions. So now, not only are you going to get more Krizik or Luxon faction, but you'll also get Balthazar faction as well for any kills that your team makes. I've started trying to get a little bit into PvP, and I was recently in Fort Aspenwood, and unfortunately, I started lagging really bad right as the battle started. And it turned out it didn't have anything to do with Guild Wars, it was just my stupid computer downloading some Windows update in the background. But it was making my system run really sluggish, and I couldn't do anything. And the other team members, they started badmouthing me because I wasn't able to keep up. And they're basically telling me that I was a liar and I wasn't really lagging. And I told them, I can't hardly see my screen. And some smart aleck was like, I can't hardly report you for leeching, which sounds witty at first, but really doesn't make any sense. So then I started spamming heal party on them, and it shut them up because they could see that I was at least trying to do something. But it was like, excuse me? But I wasn't the only person that they were bashing. There were like three people there who were just criticizing everyone, and I don't know, it just seems so childish to me. But, I mean, fortunately, the majority of the people that I have met in this game are actually quite nice, and it's just a few bad eggs that will ruin an entire party. So, I just try to let it roll off my back and not worry about it, but I do wish people would have a little more courtesy in general. Another update from Thursday was the item upgrades. This was surprising, and I am really excited about this. Some of our old greens were outdated because of the weapon stat changes, but with this new update, the mods on our greens have all been brought back up to the new max. So out of that list that they have on the updates page, I use Victo's Axe and Drago's Flatbow, and these changes are really nice. On a side note regarding weapons, I went to the weapons crafter at the faction's endgame and made myself a +5 energy katana, and I slapped a 20% enchantment mod onto it, so I've got myself a new sword for my 55. I'll have to go take it for a spin sometime soon. And my friends have also started teaching me where to farm for greens in factions. So, because of that, I've been spending a lot more time over in Kantha than I was before. Some of those greens are selling for a lot right now because they're new, and I'm hoping to snag a couple. I just recently blew 100k on a Prince Rurik mini pet, so I could probably do with replenishing some of that cash. Speaking of selling items, after Mr. Monkington's price-checking service was announced, I decided to look into it, and I gave him a couple of items, and this guy is really helpful. He didn't just look at my items and tell me, oh, this is worth 3K or whatever. He explained to me what it was that made the price of the items go up or down. Like, he explained to me, you know, the skin on this one is really good and the wreck is decent, but the damage mod is junk, or, you know, this one has good stats, but nobody really wants it, so it might take a long time to sell, and things like that. So he pointed out a few things to me that I hadn't really realized were things that made the value go down. I think I was probably pricing items too high in general. But this was really nice. He gave me a couple tips, and it's, I think, helping me get a bit better at spotting what's valuable and what's not. But anyway, I recommend that you take him up on this service. Check it out, see what he can teach you. I found it really helpful. Now, another news flash of interest, ArenaNet is going to be doing maintenance next week. It seems like a lot of people have been having trouble with Air 7s. Me, I haven't gotten any, which is crazy, because I know my connection speed is definitely slower than everyone else's. But I guess it must not be reliant on just that. Unfortunately, the time that they're going to be doing this maintenance is, like, exactly the same time that I'm usually online, so I guess I'm going to be doing something else that evening. But I am glad that they're doing the maintenance, and really, I wouldn't mind if they scheduled to do this, like, once a month if they had to. I'd rather that Arena have brief downtimes to do maintenance and run healthy servers most of the time, rather than trying to run 24/7 buggy, laggy servers. So that's just my take on that. Now, on to our topic for the week. One of the nice things about having one of each of the primary character classes is that through playing them, it's given me a good feel for what it's like to be each one of them. Sometimes it's hard to get into a group with certain classes because people don't know what your profession is capable of, but maybe if they had played one before, they might know what its strengths are. Like when I was working on ascending my Mesmer, I was concerned that I might not be able to find a group for one of the desert missions, but to my surprise, while I was looking there, there was a bonus group looking for a Mesmer to shut down the bosses quickly. So I lucked out that time. That was nice and convenient. But also, I think when you play another profession, even if you don't end up playing that profession all the time, it kind of helps you understand more about what the other members of your party are doing. For instance, a warrior who has never played a caster before might not be aware of how difficult it is to fight when everyone rushes into the next mob and your energy hasn't recharged yet. Conversely, playing a warrior myself has made me more appreciative of a good tank when I see one. Really effective tanking is actually not as easy as it might look on the surface. You have to hold all the enemies at bay so that your fragile little casters don't get hit. This means that you may not always be attacking the same target as the rest of the party. For instance, they might be casting spells on a monk that's at the back of a mob, while you as a tank are keeping the enemy warriors occupied so that they don't disrupt or kill your casters. So anyway, in keeping with tradition on these profession episodes here, I have made a video of my warrior Karina ascending. Basically, all you need to bring is Frenzy. I also brought one attack skill, but I guess you don't have to. What you do is you just equip Frenzy, and when you attack, don't use it yourself. The mirror, however, will use it, and it'll start taking damage really fast, and it'll just drop in seconds. So that's all I have for you this week. The Name That Place contest is still running, and Jatoma pointed out to me that I had the dates wrong on the post, so that's been fixed now. I haven't received many entries for it yet, and I hope that that wasn't the reason why, but if we don't have a winner by the deadline, I will extend the contest as necessary, but for now, it's still going on, so email your entries to me at ladysinaea@gmail.com. So until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
In this skills and build segment, I'm going to talk about a very popular build for the warrior known as the Shock Warrior. The Shock Warrior is a PvP-oriented warrior elementalist build focusing on heavy damage, axe inflicted conditions, and the standalone air magic skill Shock. It's geared towards random arena fights where it can be a considerable force on the field, but this build achieved popularity in GVG and Heroes Ascent as well. This build is straight out of guildwiki.org, so I'll put up a link to this page I'm reading from in the show notes for you to follow along. I'll name the skills involved in the build and go over 6 of the 8, since one I've discussed before and the other is just a res sig. So the 8 recommended skills for a Shock Warrior are Eviscerate, which is an elite skill, Axe Rake, Executioner Strike, Distracting Blow, To the Limit, Sprint, Shock, and Resurrection Signet. Please keep in mind that this is a Guild Wiki tested build that can be modified for use with a sword also, or any other skills you may feel you need to substitute. First there's Eviscerate. If Eviscerate hits, you strike for plus 10 to 34 damage and inflict a deep wound, lowering your target's maximum health by 20% for 5 to 17 seconds. This is an adrenal skill, so it takes 8 points of adrenaline and no energy. You can only get this skill by capturing it from Tanzit Razorstone in Sorrow's Furnace or Tortitudo Probo in Hell's Precipice. The second skill in this bar is Axe Rake. If this attack hits a foe suffering from a deep wound, you strike for plus 1 to 8 damage, and that foe becomes crippled for 15 seconds. This also is an adrenal skill, which takes 7 points of adrenaline and no energy. You can get it from the quest Eye for Profit in Druid's Overlook, or purchase it from Teng Sao in Amnoon Oasis, or Dak in Ember Light Camp. This skill should be used right after Eviscerate to make any difference, otherwise it's just a regular attack. And with the crippling effect of this skill, it will slow down your enemy to the point that they're just a punching bag, basically. Especially if you follow up Axe Rake with the next skill, which is Executioner Strike. With Executioner Strike, you strike for plus 10 to 34 damage. This is a straightforward attack that's basically there for finishing damage spike for the last 2 skills. You can get this in Pre-Searing Ascalon during the quest The Vineyard Problem in Baradin's Estate. And you can buy it from Sir Bertrand in Post-Searing Ascalon City, and Dak in Ember Light Camp. The next skill is Distracting Blow, where you will swipe your weapon at the target, dealing no damage, but disrupting the target's current action and the actions of foes adjacent to your target. It costs 5 energy, has an activation time of a half a second, and a recharge time of 10 seconds. You can get this skill from the quest Disruption in Xingjie Monastery. You can buy it from Marna in Ice Tooth Cave, First Watch Sergio in Lion's Arch, or Dak in Ember Light Camp. This is one of those skills that a lot of newer players will pass by because it does no damage, but interrupting the actions of your target foe and all adjacent foes is a pretty big deal, especially from a warrior, when a lot of the mere damage spells like Empathy, Spiteful Spirit, or Shield of Judgment are cast on you. To the Limit is the next skill in the set. It's a tactics shout that gives you 1 strike of adrenaline for every foe in the area, maximum 6. It has an energy cost of 5 and a recharge time of 20 seconds. This skill is used to recharge the adrenaline that you use on the adrenaline skills of this build. A nice little feature of this skill that some people don't realize is you don't need to be attacking for it to work. You can run by a group of foes, activate the skill, and gain the adrenaline. You can get this shout from the quest The False Gods in Temple of the Ages, or buy it from Bartok in Drachner's Forge, or Dak in Ember Light Camp. The next skill, Sprint, is one I've talked about before, but basically it's used to make you move 25% faster. If you want an adrenal alternative to this, you can use Rush. And lastly, the namesake of this whole build, Shock. target touched foe is struck for 10 to 50 lightning damage and is knocked down. This skill has 25% armor penetration. This skill causes exhaustion. It has an energy cost of 5, an activation time of 3/4 of a second, and a recharge time of 10 seconds. You can get this from Mazim in Fisherman's Haven, Teng Sao in the Amnoon Oasis, and Dak in Ember Light Camp. Note that this is not a spell, but a skill or ability. So, therefore, shut down Mesmer techniques such as Backfire and most Interrupt skills will not work on it. Also keep in mind that the knockdown will also double as an interrupt for spellcasters. An obvious disadvantage for its cheap cost is that it causes exhaustion. There's always a danger with cheap, fast recharging skills quickly filling the exhaustion bar. So that'll do it for this episode of Guildcast. If you're listening to this before Sunday the 18th, then just a little reminder about the trivia contest going on that day at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, or 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time in Sardalak Sanitarium, International District 1. If you'd like to contact us, you can at sean@guildcast.com or ladysinea@gmail.com. We have that email show coming up in 2 weeks, so get your email questions in for that, and we may read it on the show. And remember, you have about 2 weeks left to get your applications in for the scrimmage tournament also. But until next time, be sure to tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.
Hey Sean, what's up? This is Silius Gore. I recently contacted you earlier. Thanks for talking to me in the game and whatnot, and I really appreciate that. And finally send you an audio message. And, there's a thing I want to know. If anybody that wants to help me, you can, like, go in the game and help me at SILIUSDORD or on SHALLBLAK. I'll be in, Sayatung Harbor, I believe, on Silius Gord, and, on Shalbach, I'll be in, the wild. So, yeah. Anyway, wants to help me, just go on over there. Help me and whatnot. And, John, great podcast for, I believe I'm episode 19, 17, 17 through 16 or 17. I can't remember much. Great so far. Keep up the good work, and the game's awesome. Love it. Bye.